The Internet, the final frontier.
Hey, you're listening to Boldly Going Nowhere. It's a podcast. You listen to it with your ears. On today's episode, I'll talk about a local-ish folk music band called Stray Birds. Colin and Sean will talk about The Last Starfighter. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kackness.
And I'm Sean Holmes.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere. So I'm going to start things off today. You can't see this, but I'm going to remove an article of clothing because it's very warm in here. So you can't see it, but you might be able to hear the podcast getting 5 to 10% sexier. It's better. I feel liberated.
Yeah. Show them upper arms.
So, before we get into music, movies, the bread and butter of this show.
Or cracker and mustard.
Sure.
those of you who get the reference will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, the, I don't know, wheat thin and delicious
horseradish
crab dip that I made myself.
The Triscuit and Brie.
Ooh, let's go with that one.
That actually sounds pretty appetizing, to be honest.
The bruschetta and whatever goes on top of.
Okay, well, just cut to the chase.
Okay. Webcomics. Colin has opinions on it. I have opinions on it. Let's share our opinions. Sean doesn't have opinions, but
Sean
he
likes
has
to listen.
Outbursts.
Yes, and if you guys talk about webcomics, I feel left out, so therefore I can have full reign of the soundboard.
Oh, dear.
Neither, we didn't say that. But
but I think that should be a rule.
Okay, I mean, we can't really stop you, but...
Okay, that's
just fine. Use your judgment.
Oh, yeah, I will.
That's a bad idea. Use his judgment. What judgment?
Yeah.
And away I type. All right, go ahead with the...
well, yes. So, Justin and I were talking about this, and fairly recently it seems as if webcomic artists are just getting shit on.
That's a vague statement.
Well,
but
I mean,
a good
like,
opening.
I should say they're getting shit on by like the fates of the universe. You know what I mean? To give you a for instance, Jeff Jacks, we interviewed at SPX. What was it? 2 years ago at this point?
Yeah.
2 years ago, recently injured himself.
Writes popular webcomic, questionable content.
Yeah, he injured himself and it was a big deal. Everyone was freaking out because they were like, oh my God, what's gonna happen today?
Yeah, I didn't see them, but I imagine that's what they were doing.
Exactly. And then another popular webcomic, Wasted Talent, Angela Melick, recently, she works for an ecological technology company. The idea is they're trying to make green technology to adapt into, you know, the normal lifestyle.
That's good.
Well, unfortunately, the company has gone belly up. They've lost its funding completely, so they had to let her go.
Not good.
Yes, and that was actually one of the comics she did. I was like, and then also for those, you know, who read my Twitter, which if you do, awesome. If you don't, damn you. But Control-Alt-Delete has recently ended.
Yeah, which probably will be the main point of this conversation, but also one other web comic.
Yes, The Order of the Stick.
Sadness piece of news is Rich Berlew, who does The Order of the Stick, also had injured his hand. This is not as recent. I mean, he cut his thumb really badly. This is like 2 months ago, but he's been unable to update the comic for about 2 months. That was that bad an injury.
Any idea as to when he's going to be able to come back?
They post pictures up on the site. If you go to www.giantitp.com, which stands for Giant in the Playground, he posts updates, which the most recent one was actually from the 26th, so actually pretty recent.
So fairly recent, okay.
So he's doing better, and he's starting to draw again, but he can't really hold a pencil.
Oh,
Okay. Yet.
Well, obviously, we hope we here at the show wish to Jeff Jacks, Angela Mellick. I'm sorry, what was the name of the guy from Order of the State?
Rich Berlew.
Rich Berlew. We wish them immediate turnaround in their successes, so that, you know, they can get back to making that good webcomic goodness we love so much. Now, mind you, you all are probably wondering why I left Tim Buckley of Control-Alt-Delete off of that list. Well, to be honest, I don't really wish him well, to be honest.
Well, nothing really happened to him. This is what he did.
Yes, for those of you who aren't in the know with Control-Alt-Delete, wow, that's really distracting. But that's okay.
I'll allow it.
Oh, I'll allow it.
It's a musical bed.
Yes. Thank you, Sean.
Good use of the lingo.
Yeah, I was going to say, taking full advantage of that soundboard privilege, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, it's not as intrusive.
Good use of the lingo.
Oh, no, it's good. It wasn't as intrusive.
Okay,
no,
so
it's good. I like it. For those of you who aren't familiar, Control-Alt-Delete has recently come to an end with, if you are a fan of Control-Alt-Delete and you don't want me to spoil its end, then just go ahead and skip about 3 minutes into the future, because I'll probably be done talking about it at that point. Otherwise, apparently in the last story arc, Ethan has been pulled into the future by an older version of himself to witness the horror that has been inflicted on the world by his pet Xbox robot, Zeke. And apparently there's all these trials and tribulations. He gets caught by the human resistance. He tries to befriend one of them and tries to convince her to let him escape. She basically, you know, gets pulled on a reconnaissance mission. She leaves a key and says, "You can leave if I'm not back in 5 minutes." And he leaves. He goes back and gets into a fist fight with himself, which you think at that point would enact some sort of time cop style law where they would just mash together in a giant uncomfortable pool of Ron Silver, but
I don't want to go swimming in that pool.
No, no one would. I guess my total issue with this is the ending. Basically, it ends that future Ethan has decided that, you know, he's going to send him back and then let him attempt to fix it now that he's seen it. But apparently, the guard who let him go was only letting him go as a ploy. So future Ethan kills the guard.
You know, can I just say, summarizing the plot of the latest Control Alt-Delete
story arc.
It's kind of useless anyways. Because my biggest problem with the story of Control Alt-Delete is that it has a story.
Yeah.
This is harsh criticism, but I'm not going to pull any punches. The guy who writes it, whose name just escaped me, Tim Buckley. Thank you.
Tim Buckley.
Tim Buckley, I'm sorry to say, not a good writer. Okay, but that's not why I got into Control-Alt-Delete in the first place, because that's not why I really read webcomics. But he purports himself to be a writer and wrote like a 4-page treatise about his decision to end Control-Alt-Delete and why he ended it the way he did. And then I got halfway through it. Now, mind you, I had stopped reading Control-Alt-Delete several weeks ago, so at this point, I didn't even know that it had ended.
Yeah, I was going to say, wasn't it because of this very storyline?
Yes. Colin was the one who told me it ended, so I went to the site, checked it out, started to read his post, and I'm like, Tim Buckley, you pretentious asshole, you're not writing War and Peace, you're not writing Anna Karenina, you're writing a webcomic about video games, your characters are dumb. And most importantly, your protagonist is completely unlikable. He is one of the worst protagonists I've ever seen in any piece of fiction, whether that be comics, movies, books, doesn't matter. Ethan is the most annoying protagonist I've ever seen in any piece of fiction.
I'm going to go with that.
What's that? I haven't read Twilight, so
I don't think anyone has here either.
Yeah, I've not watched, read, or experienced anything Twilight-related, but that I've personally experienced, Ethan is the most frustrating, because for, you know, the first 90% of the comic's life, Ethan is retarded.
And yeah, and it's you know, and it really going back on it, because I have read the entire catalog. I've been keeping up with this comic since about 2004. And, yeah, I will admit, Ethan is supposed to represent a slightly, I mean, it's supposed to, he's supposed to be the general gamer populace. But then
which
again,
is,
that's kind of a
I'm surprised
backhanded.
It's a real, that's not even backhanded. That's just like grave, horrible insult against gamers in general.
Because it basically is saying, oh, we can't, you know, possibly realize the distinction between fantasy and reality.
And that we have the attention spans of fleas.
Yeah, but this whole time, another thing that always bothered me was his fucking preachiness about when gamers are blamed for, you know, all of society's problems. Like, you know, when Jack Thompson, you know, went on his little tirade. He went on this, he did like three or four comics, you know, basically calling Jack Thompson a bitch. I was like, dude, you're not any better. You're basically purporting us to be fucking morons.
Yeah. So when you take a character that you have built up over years and years of comics to be impulsive, idiotic, childish, and generally has no redeeming qualities whatsoever, and then suddenly try to inject pathos into the character by having all these like really serious dark tragedies happen to him and expect me to feel anything for your character, you're a bad writer. Okay? That's like a bait and switch. And I don't like it.
Yeah, it's like I went to, you know, I liked Control-Alt-Delete because it had stupid video game jokes.
Yes, and those I enjoyed genuinely because that's what I was reading it for.
Well, and unfortunately, it's like this last storyline. Like, he went on to say in his blog post about why he was ending Control-Alt-Delete, it was like, oh, I'm ending Control-Alt-Delete in its current format. The players 1 through 4, they're going to now be the main focus of Control-Alt-Delete. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, that might have been a good idea if you had done that 9 years ago.
Right.
But at this point, you've completely just burnt me out of your fucking scenario.
Yeah.
I don't care if you switch it to just all video. You could do all video game jokes at this point, really. You could do what you did strongly back 10 years ago, but now that you've burnt me this way, I mean, yeah, he's basically burnt those who have remained loyal to him. He's basically burnt us at the very last minute just because he doesn't feel like writing these characters anymore.
Right, that's what really gets me is that Tim Buckley himself admitted in his gigantic news post that the reason he ended is because he himself was fed up with his characters. You wrote them.
It's
you
like,
created
yeah.
them, and you made choices as a writer, and now you're saying, like, well, I don't like this.
Yeah, unfortunately, he fails to realize that, you know, if he goes and he builds up, I mean, and Justin, you made a good point a few weeks ago. We were talking about this. He had mentioned that I was kind of my argument in the beginning was he really owes it to the fans to do something better. And Justin had said something along the lines of, oh, well, that kind of sounds like a Mass Effect 3 argument.
It yeah, we did have
which,
that
yes, which we did. But I was like, no, no, no. There's a difference between Mass Effect 3 and the ending of Control-Alt-Delete. Mass Effect 3 was merely that was basically fan outrage at a very ambiguous ending.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, we will admit the original ending to Mass Effect 3 was ambiguous. But it also kind of made sense. Because not every story has a saccharine ending, you know? People do die. And yes, if you're playing a character, I mean, look at the end of the American campaign of Call of Duty Modern Warfare. You put not 8-9 hours into it, and your fucking character dies at the end. And no, he doesn't come back at the end. Your character, like, literally dies in a nuclear winter. That's it. Game over.
Yeah.
Right? Well, unfortunately, Mass Effect 3 ended like that, and there was such fan outrage. They were like, this is fucking bullshit. There should be an ending where he fucking lives. It's like, no. Not everyone gets to live in a fucking apocalypse.
Especially if you're Commander Shepard. If you really didn't, like, imagine that's how it was going to end.
If you really thought that story was going to end well, then you really don't know what the fuck you're talking
about.
You
kind of missed the point of Mass Effect as a story.
No, but my problem with, and yes, if my argument had just been, oh, that ending was bullshit, you know, he just should have ended it happily. I'm like, no, here's my problem with Control-Alt-Delete. I couldn't give a shit if he ended it badly. Like, you know, present Ethan could have died. That would have been fine with me. My problem is that he put him into a scenario which left it open-ended so that if at some point he got burnt out of writing the players' characters, he could just go back and be like, oh, well, I just plucked him out of the time stream and put him back into this scenario. He basically put him in a scenario where he was like, oh, the machine's going out of control. Oh, my future self just got shot. Who's going to shut the machine down? Well, I guess I have to do it. Oh, well, guess I'm stuck in the time vortex. I'll never see my wife again. Man.
Yeah, I'm like, ultimate sacrifice, you know.
I'm like, are you
fucking... Your loved one dying, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you really can't make me... Yeah,
I don't really want to discuss the specifics of the story itself.
Because it's fucking stupid.
Well, yeah, what you really want to discuss is just...
It's the issue becomes, for me, is that you built up a fan base of hundreds of thousands of people. And yes, I'll agree with you, Justin. Ethan is a moron. Okay? I don't think we're here to argue that. But,
okay.
But here's the thing. For those of us who have been around since the beginning, we got used to it. We're like, okay, he's an idiot, but at least there's consistency on how much of a fucking idiot he is.
Except for, you know, that story arc where he became smart for no reason.
Yes. He was electrocuted and yeah. But yeah. Other than that, I mean, you could pretty much consistently, okay, Ethan's the idiot, you know, Ethan's the idiot, Lucas is, you know, the straight man, Lila's his, you know, his shoulder to lean on and all that crap, right? To just basically pluck Ethan out of his native habitat, put him into a fucking stupid scenario like, okay, he's in the future. Oh, and now he has to sacrifice himself to save both the future and his past, which would he be his present? I'm like, okay, not only does that not make any fucking sense.
It has nothing to do with the world of the comic that you've created.
Exactly.
I get what you're saying.
And he pulled one of the dumbest fucking scenarios from his first year of comic writing.
Yeah.
Which was that time travel scenario. It was like, why would you end the comic this way? Even if he has a shitty ending, he got hit by a car and, you know, he's dying. Oh, and everyone has to say their tearful goodbyes to him. Bam, done. That would have been fine. I couldn't give a shit if Ethan had, like, died a horrible, horrible death. Or, you know, if someone had died a horrible death and, you know, you saw some, you know, horrible... I mean, it would have made sense. But to pluck him, put him in the future, and then basically put a scenario in which he has to save two universes from utter destruction. I'm like, that is way beyond anything his character ever had to deal with before. And I very highly doubt he would know what the fuck to do.
Yeah.
So... Bad form, Tim Buckley. Bad form.
Bad form. I didn't like it.
I know. I didn't like it.
I really didn't like it.
Never.
Did not like it one bit. Okay. Let's talk about music, shall we?
Yes, please.
So, a couple weeks ago, Con and Sean, or was Con and Sean, right?
Yes.
Okay. You guys were at Cafe Nola. I wasn't able to join you. And you guys saw a band.
Yes, we did.
That you really liked.
Yes.
I really liked. This band was definitely a down home feel.
So,
yeah.
I didn't get to see them, but I got to listen to their CD.
Oh.
And the band is called The Stray Birds.
Before we start your segment, I think we need to get a word from one of our friends. We have friends? He's a bit of a douchebag, though.
Oh, okay, I see where this is going.
He's a bit of a douchebag.
Go ahead.
But I don't know. I guess if he goes to Starbucks, he would say something like,
well, only if it's a soy venti latte.
Oh.
And there we go. Oh, okay, go ahead.
I mean, I guess it's appropriate because you were at a cafe when you saw them.
Surprisingly, exactly. Yes, we were.
So was he in attendance or anyone of his ilk?
Well, actually,
I despise Starbucks.
But, you know, he was there, so.
Yes.
Obvs.
Yeah. All right, you go ahead with your...
Vintage.
Well, I'll just read their bio from their website.
Okay.
www.thestraybirds.com. When the Stray Birds take the stage, the spotlight falls on three voices raised in harmony above the raw resonance of wooden strings. It is a sound drawn from the richness of American folk music traditions, spun with a stirring subtlety and grace. From bustling street corners to silent halls, their performances speak to an uncompromising reverence for songs. Raised within a few miles of farmland from each other in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, their flight began with friendship. With miles of music already behind them, Maya DeVitri and Oliver Craven first shared a song in January 2010. A snowy Pennsylvania winter welcomed a collaboration between the two creative flames and inspired the collection of seven songs found on the Borderland EP. Grounded in the unshakable groove of bassist Charles Munch, the trio landed their signature sound. An ambitious Toads. Touring schedule reflects their embrace of the experience of live music. Music exists in a time and place, not just in a digital format, says Charles.
Reveling is that artisanal?
In the energy of each room, a connection to the audience is the essence of their show. So I really feel like I missed out.
Accept him on LinkedIn, but not Facebook.
That bio makes me really feel like I missed out because I didn't actually see him live. But you know what?
They were pretty kicking live.
Get the Stray Birds self-titled LP because it's really good. I mean, it might have sounded like I was being kind of condescending reading that description, but you have to take into account that all band bios are ridiculous.
You should have been there.
You really speak truly, hipster douchebag. You speak truly. And
Obvs.
Maybe I couldn't get the same experience, but there's actually no... I'm not being sarcastic about this. Stray Birds is really nice. It's really relaxing, and it's totally what I was looking for because I've been getting into folk music a lot more recently. And this is folk music, pure and simple. I mean, it's straight up folk. So let's play a little bit of the first song off Stray Birds, Dreamin' Blue. Just like we missed out, I missed out on the full live experience by hearing this through a podcast. You're not getting the full experience of listening to the album, but maybe that's a good thing because, you know, you should actually get the album.
Well, not only should you get the album, you really, if they are playing locally, you really should take the opportunity to see them because they are quite awesome.
They have a pretty busy touring schedule, so they're definitely around.
Pretty consistent. I mean, they perform a lot around Maryland, Pennsylvania. Yeah.
But, of course, my experience with folk music being admittedly somewhat limited, my first thought is Iron and Wine because that's the folk artist I'm most familiar with.
Right.
But it's much more, I think, traditional than Iron and Wine or...
Yes.
I mean, if we want to group in folk artists that are popular right now, we can say Iron and Wine, we can say Mumford and Sons, which is probably the most popular, and Fleet Foxes. I would sort of classify them as quasi-folk. But none of those are what I'd call pure folk. This is pure folk. And I think pure is a good descriptor for this album. All the songs have a real honesty. There's no irony here. There's nothing tongue in cheek about these songs.
No,
they're really straightforward.
It's straight up folk music, which is it's a rather refreshing change of pace because if you really think of like Mumford and Son and Iron and Wine, they try to play it up straight, but every so often there's a little incision of the new.
Yeah.
You know, just to keep in tune with the 21st century. This group does not have that. I mean, everything they do is, like, straight-up folk music.
Well, let me play the next song, because this exemplifies one of the things I like most about folk music, which is its ability to tell a story. So this is 25 to Life.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll just let him get to the chorus. Things I like about this band and folk music in general is that really good folk is clear and balanced. You can hear all the instruments in perfect harmony with each other. None of them, there's no instrument that's too loud that stands out more than the others. Folk music is really, at least in a band, is a really group experience. So there's, you're not going to see a lot of solos, and even the vocals. You know, you have a singer, but it's a lot of harmonies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with this group.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and one of the bonuses about this group is, as to say, opposed to, say, Mumford & Son. I mean, this is basically a three-piece. It's a double bass, a banjo player, and a violin player, a fiddle player, right?
Yeah, it's a three-piece. At least there's three people on the cover.
Yeah, I mean, they play multiple instruments.
Yes, but I mean, the predominant lineup within the songs, usually bass, banjo, fiddle.
Yeah.
And I just love that.
There's actually a much longer bio on their site, too, but I'm not going to read the whole thing.
I was going to say, you sounded pretentious enough with the first one. I don't really think you should do it again.
No, I'm not going to, but
I do like the no-nonsense part of it.
Yeah.
Like, the music has, it feels like a place, and that's what I mean.
Yeah, it definitely.
It's rare that hearing something makes you feel in a different place, and that's something that I think a lot of musicians strive for. But these particular musicians, like, you listen to this music, just think of where you are.
Yeah, well, it does sound like a place. It really does evoke rural Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Actually, I was going to say, I actually had a chance to listen to this album. Once we're done listening to this song, I have a request.
Okay. I was going to, all right, what's your request?
Track 5.
That's actually the next one I was going to play.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Great minds think alike. Mm. Yeah, so the last song I'm going to play off of here, this is a sort of a turnaround from track 2. That was 25 to Life. Track 5, No Part of Nothing, is sort of the other end of the spectrum. It's just a real fun song to listen to.
Yeah, it's really jaunty.
Yeah. It's,
I'm going to say this is, I'm going to go on record now and say this is my favorite track off of this album.
Yeah, this one's real kind of sly and doesn't take itself too seriously.
Nope.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's probably the best song on the album. That's why I'm going to end the review on this one. You might ask me, because I've said many times in the past that I really hate country music. When I say country music, I mean like what's played on the radio on country music stations. And you might ask, well, how is this that much different from country music? And it's the same as asking me what's the difference between, you know, indie rock and pop rock is artistic sentiment. They're not singing about tractors and, you know, they're not singing about getting ketchup stains on their white T-shirts. And unlike all of what's played on country music stations, this actually has personality, has its own sound that you can say, oh yeah.
It doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel primed and polished like a poodle, you know?
Right.
It doesn't have, it just has like old mutt quality. Like, yeah, that's the music. Yeah, it comes from there. Yeah, it's awesome. Like that, like, it's there.
It certainly hews to the traditions of folk music, but it's still, it's its own thing. You know, they use their influences, they draw inspiration from their influences, but they don't just copy them. They use them and they create something new. So it's a real sort of roots-based album. But, yep. You know, it's got deep roots, but it grows tall.
Yeah,
like
I would definitely say that the major difference between, like, say, this folk group and any country group is that you would say that in most conventional country music nowadays, they're just basically playing to sociopolitical stereotypes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, everybody, you know, who listens to country music must love NASCAR, must love big trucks, must love, you know, trailers, double wides.
Right.
Whereas this one, it actually just crosses the gamut of, you know, oh, here's a scenario that could fucking happen to anybody.
Yeah. I think folk music isn't, this folk music is intelligent, whereas popular country music is anti-intellectual. It condemns book learning and intelligence, and it's just empty. It is really what it is. I mean, I don't care if there are people who enjoy country music out there.
We hope you do.
I hope you do. But that is one area where I feel perfectly fine in generalizing that everything that is played on country music station is utter crap. So
I huff propane.
If there was a station that played folk music, that played more stuff like this, and, you know, I didn't have to subscribe to, you know, Sirius XM satellite radio to get it, then maybe I would listen to FM radio more. But,
well, there's an easier way to do that. Just go to Cafe Nola on Fridays.
Yeah. Because you'll find artists like this and many more.
Surprisingly enough, friends of the show, friends of the band, going to be playing there next week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We got a super sharpshooter from Baltimore. As our friend Anna. And Silent Old Mountain.
And if you have not seen Silent Old Mountains, that is an experience you don't want to miss. Frederick's got a pretty great music scene right now, and Silent Old Mountains are at the forefront, so
yep.
That's going to be a great show. Those are two bands you do not want to miss.
Nope.
So that's my music segment for this week.
All right.
Do you want to hear a little break from Sean Holmes?
Actually, I'll just do it live, and I'll just tell you all about what you can do at CastWaveStudios.com.
CastWave Studios.
If you go to castwavestudios.com/support, you'll find things ranging from donating, which I encourage you to do.
I wholeheartedly encourage you.
With the holiday season, show your generosity.
For the holiday season, of course. And then you can also advertise here. We can sponsor one of these segments here. You know, instead of the hipster douchebag, you can actually have a spot from you, or we'll read whatever copy.
Please, because Lord knows we hear enough from the hipster douchebags.
Exactly. And they're only $10 a piece, so, you know, it's pretty cheap. And you can go to the page and then shop through Amazon or click through.
So, and with the holiday season, that is a big, big benefit to you and us.
Cyber Monday deals just passed, but there's still deals out there. So, and Amazon's a pretty cheap place to shop.
Yes.
So just bookmark us. So thank you.
If you want to shop in your underwear, you might as well do it through CastWaveStudios.com.
Indeed.
CastWaveStudios.com. Shop in your underwear. All right, and now it's time. What's it time for? BGN at the movies.
Yeah.
Wait, that's the wrong music. We want something. I don't know. a little classic.
DJ, spin that shit.
There we go.
Ah, that's much better.
All right.
Like getting into a pair of old pants. All right. So this week we meant to go see Skyfall and forgot to do it again. I guess we're just being lazy. Whatever. Movies are expensive these days.
They really are. They're like, if, especially if you see it on IMAX.
I know, right? And it's
and
like,
it's like,
in certain cases, it's like, why go see?
$18 a ticket.
I mean, now we're in December. It's like part
can't
of
you buy
bucks,
like a whole movie? Actually,
$18
like,
bucks. Yeah,
like
usually
three whole movies if you go on to Amazon.com. Wow.
You
want to
hear a good
wow
strategy though for saving money at the movies?
What's that?
I totally swear I'm not getting paid by them to say this, but Schick Razors is partnering with Fandango.
Fandango.
If you buy two specially marked packs of Schick two-blade razors, which you can get like 10 in a pack, so they're not like the, they're not, you know, they're cheap disposable razors, but they're a little better than just like the Bic single-blade razors, which you might as well be shaving
yeah
with like a butter knife.
Right.
Or a cutlass.
Yeah. I actually, the Schick, these two-blade razors, they come with a little coupon that you can redeem. If you redeem two of them, you get a free Fandango movie ticket.
Exactly.
And that's not just a free ticket, but what it actually is a voucher for $14.50, which, depending on where you live and what theaters you're going to, might actually be more than the cost of a single movie ticket.
Yeah.
So, and you can use it on anything. Unlike, say, if you go to Regal Cinemas and they have, or other
yeah
cinemas that
use
have
their
rewards.
Discount, yeah, their discount rewards program.
And
you
get free movie passes. When you get free movie passes, it's a goddamn joke because you can't use it on hardly anything. But the Fandango is just a voucher. It's not an actual. So you can use it on 3D showings, IMAX showings. You can use it on literally anything because it just takes $14.50 off the cost of your ticket. So
right,
seriously, not getting paid by either Fandango. And yes, I insist on calling it that.
Fandango.
Or Schick. I'm not getting like Fandango paid by either, but seriously, since you got to buy razors anyway, you might as well get free movie tickets.
There you go. Well, so after forgetting to go see Skyfall for the second week in a row, we were talking about it, and we actually had this idea for a video review, which we're going to do called the 12 Days of Video Gamemas or something like this.
Something like that.
Something like that. The title isn't working. Or the 12 days, or the road to MAGFest.
Give us a break. Titles are hard, people.
Yeah, titles are difficult. So the idea was to start with certain movies. Like, so we decided we're going to start those movies with 1984's The Last Starfighter. Anybody ever seen that movie? Besides,
well, we have.
Well,
we
obviously. I mean, well, so
you guys, as you're just sort of rhetorically asking,
yeah,
the audience
bad time.
Who can't
I guess, yeah,
back.
It's really the audience, but you guys are answering, so it just. Basically the
I've never
question
seen it. What's it about?
Thank you. Save my ego a little bit. I appreciate that. Sean.
Yes.
Now, thank you. I was waiting for that. I will say this much. This movie had a pretty kick-ass theme song. For like the first 12 bars.
Yeah.
Because eventually, and
it
I believe
had half of a kick-ass
yeah
theme.
Yeah, it had half of a kick-ass theme. And then, like, Jordan,
anyway.
I think it was either Jordan or Justin pointed out.
No, it was Jordan. Let's
it was Jordan that, yeah, it was Jordan that pointed out that eventually it basically just turns into the riff from the Indiana Jones theme cut off halfway.
Yeah. Like
correct, Jordan?
They just can't quite get started.
So, that's already one point, and that's already one point against it. So, it starts good, and ends badly. But, which, actually, I think, you know, I can't even say that for the movie. I was going to say, oh, yeah, it starts bad, starts
you're
good, ends
like,
badly.
Oh, that's a perfect way to describe this movie.
But it's really
not,
because it's all bad, to be honest.
I really enjoyed it, though. I mean, it's
laughably enjoyable,
it was the
but
right kind of bad that I had a great time watching it.
The problem I had with this movie is the way it started out, you're just like, well, this looks very rural. And you just walk in. It's just a trailer park. It just feels very country-esque.
All right, well, yeah. My first issue with it is during the credits sequence, it's like I'm watching the credits to Superman, but rewinding it. Because it literally starts off on the planet Earth, and it's like zipping through the solar system, and the credits are, instead of flying out, and then it's like flying back, and then... It's like literally watch the credits from watch the intro credits to Superman, and then go back and watch the credits to The Last Starfighter, and it like you feel like you're watching Superman in reverse. It's kind of creepy. but
it is.
Well, I mean, it's just like, first of all, yeah, like Sean says, it starts in a trailer park, and really, it's
very country looking.
Let's see. Like, we start with Alex Rogan, played by Lance Guest. And has anyone ever heard of Lance Guest outside of this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No. So that should tell you about the
cricket sounds.
I was gonna say that should tell you about the caliber of acting we've got going into this. That's one problem. Is that our main protagonist? I think anybody out of this movie, everybody out of this movie is either dead or had their career end after this film.
Either they're dead or their career is dead.
Yeah, pretty much. Because the two notable actors are Robert Preston of The Music Man. I think it was Robert Preston of The Music Man.
Yep.
And Dan O'Hurley from the RoboCop films. He played the boss of OCP for the first two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I will say this about our protagonist. Actually about our actor playing our protagonist, Lance Guest. He's got some really goofy facial expressions throughout this movie.
Yeah, he does.
And I think someone, not me, but someone more, better inclined to edit things together should create a clip. A clip reel of all of his facial expressions throughout this movie.
I'll probably do that because like I said, we're going to do a video review of that movie, and I probably will do that.
Okay. I look forward to seeing that because I can't really do them justice by describing them, but...
Yes, but so many issues with this film. Okay, first and foremost, Alex lives in a trailer park, and the largest thing that goes on in this trailer park is one night Alex is playing the eponymous Starfighter game, which... Really, if you go back and watch this film, you could really just call this movie Galaga the Movie or Gradius the Movie. It's basically just one of those 80s shooter games. I'm sorry. What?
X-Men the Arcade Game.
The movie. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there was vector graphics.
It looked,
Star Wars the Arcade
it
Game the Movie.
Like
there you go. That's much better. That's all right. Don't worry about it.
It looked like a 3D version of Asteroids.
Yeah, it was a little more advanced than, Galaga.
It was Asteroids with 3D graphics.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. It's
primitive.
The idea is an alien race trying to recruit pilots has put a video game on Earth to, basically see who is the best pilot on the planet. And it turns out it's this American teenager in a middle of nowhere trailer park, which I was like, really? You couldn't squeeze a few Koreans out of that? Wow. That's pretty pathetic. Because unfortunately, this is the point. Well, I mean, this movie is set in the mid 80s. Arcades had already crashed here in the States. I mean, they'd hit their high mark in 83, and then the market crashed, and then in 84. The large bulk of them had actually started to die off. If you watched...
How do you think they got that Starfighter cabinet at that trailer park? They probably bought it at an auction.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually, the Centauri character played by Robert Preston actually explains it was all just a fluke. That was actually supposed to go to Vegas.
Well, that just raises even more questions. Why would they be sending an arcade cabinet to Vegas?
Right.
Because Vegas gets a lot of people.
And money.
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Which is very important to Centauri.
Yeah, if you watch the movie, you'll find out.
Yeah.
But there's a huge plot points that just, there's so many large plot holes in that. Like, for instance, the Kodan Armada, who are the labeled the villains of the film,
right,
are led by Zur, which I always found funny because Zur is a Rylan, right?
Yeah.
Rylan?
Yeah.
He's a Rylan that's aligned himself with the Kodan Armada, and the idea is they're trying to overtake the Star League by breaking through the frontier. And the frontier, as it's been explained, is a giant array of shields around the Star League systems. So they're able to penetrate this little hole through the frontier, and they fire, and they just basically lob meteors at the Starfighter base, right? Here's my question. If you have shields that can surround entire galaxies, why the fuck couldn't you create a shield to protect your base against a couple of fucking asteroids.
Sort of like the age-old question, if the black box on the plane is indestructible, why don't they make the plane out of that?
Black boxes. I guess it's not aerodynamic enough.
Which is actually a really dumb question, but...
It is a dumb question, but it's valid, I think.
But there's that. There's, again... You're telling me it's...
What is a valid question, though, is why is it the Starfighter base and not, like, a Starfighter base? Why do they only have one?
Please.
Yeah, it's, like, they have all their star... Like, I remember the speech is, you, few proud Starfighters, have to defend billions of lives of the Star League. I'm like, so you got 20 guys defending billions of people.
Maybe the Star League should up their defense budget a little bit. I mean... I'm not for war profiteering. I'm definitely not a hawk.
You don't do the budgetary. I do.
But
recharge it per laser now?
It's there's so
maybe
many.
Maybe recruit more than 30. have billions of citizens.
And why is it a league? Can we have like a group or association so we can invite more people into this group?
Well, sounds pretty inclusive. You know,
well, and here's another
exclusive
thing.
Exclusive.
It does sound exclusive.
Here's
very
another thing
elitist.
That cracks me up. When Alex is first recruited, he's replaced by a beta unit, which is basically a robot that is set to mimic his appearance.
He's a simuloid. He gets very offended when you call him a robot.
Right. I'm sorry.
I'm a
top-of-the-line beta unit. I'm sorry. Well, here's the thing that cracks me up. When Alex asks him, why don't you go up and fight in my place, he's like, I can't. Simuloids aren't allowed. I'm like, why? They seem like the perfect candidates. They're freaking robots.
Yeah.
The loss of like physical, like actual life over a robotic life. I mean, the simuloids you would assume can be rebuilt.
Yeah, but that's why Blade Runner understood that.
Yeah, it's Blade Runner got this right. Why couldn't you get it right, Last Starfighter?
And don't tell me you haven't seen Blade Runner, creators of Last Starfighter.
Hey, Blade Runner came out in what, 78? 82? That's a full 2 years before Last Starfighter. Where the fuck were these
guys?
You
had time.
You had time. Anyway, so...
And the books, the story was written much earlier than that.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah, so... A little bit. The issue, I guess that, like, there are so many plot holes. I mean, it is funny for a few performances. Like, Robert Preston as Centauri being, like a cross between, like, what was it? A cross between Obi-Wan Kenobi and, there you go. He's like basically a flim-flam man who showed up. He's just like, here, I'm going to recruit you into this interstellar armed forces.
If it wasn't for him, like seriously, there would be no movie.
Yeah.
Centauri is like the guy like, all right, we have to make this kid go on an adventure.
Grab
your nearest old wise man. Well, we got this gambling guy from the space. All right.
That'll work.
Centauri?
That'll fucking work. Well, there's Centauri. No. Yeah, there's Centauri, and then there's Grieg, played by Dan O'Hurley, who's like a giant armadillo man.
Yes.
And Grieg, really, the Grieg, the only funny thing is
Grieg,
whatever.
This is important, damn it.
The only thing that's really funny about Grieg is that after every time Alex succeeds at something, he just does this horrific, like, spastic laugh. You did it!
My boy.
He's married to a wifeoid. He has a wifeoid who basically just is another armadillo person.
I think he looked like scaled crap.
Yeah,
honestly.
Actually, another thing I noticed is did the Codans. The Codans looked like smeared poo people.
They looked like smooth.
Smooth people.
Smeared
poo people. Smoods.
I thought it was amusing. I don't know if anyone else noticed, but Grieg and Alex spend a large portion of the movie together flying around in their gun starship.
Yeah.
And anytime one of them is explaining something to the other one looks really freaking bored. Like at no point does Grieg or Alex show the remotest bit of interest in what his partner is saying.
No, not at all. Because, well, the assumption being is that they are the only Starfighter crew left, so they could really die at any moment.
And Grieg, you know, he really could have used a better partner, because Grieg seemed to repeatedly forget that he was piloting the ship.
Yeah.
Alex was just controlling the guns. He can't actually make the ship move, and Grieg would just sort of sit there and be like, look out for that thing.
Oh, look out!
It's like, why don't you dodge it?
I don't look up.
It's like fly us the fuck out of here. I think at one point, Alex literally has to say, hey, fly us out of here.
Yeah. Did you forget that you have to make us move?
Oh, and another thing that I loved was, towards the end,
I have some movie clips if you want.
Oh, please. Let's hear some of it.
Okay, we got Record Breaker. You want a Record Breaker?
Oh,
well,
yes.
Because that's my favorite part of the movie.
Here. It's like 2 minutes.
My favorite part of the movie is in the first 10 minutes.
I got you.
One sec. Okay.
Do it.
Look. Oh, my God. Was it 900,000? You're gonna bust the record. Hey, listen up, everybody. Alex is going for the record.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but this is what's considered a huge fucking moment in the trailer park. This is like, seriously, when World War II ended in New York City, everyone is going to party at this shit. Everyone's going to remember the day Alex and Manny left for the stars.
And then all the people are just... Old people just...
The entire town is pouring out.
Right, this entire trailer park is just...
This is the biggest news that's happened since Timmy drowned in the well.
I love how his little brother's like trying to convince these people who are like 5 times his age to get the fuck back.
There's like really no more quotes on that quote. It's just,
women freaking the fuck out. It's
This is a visual reference, so you're gonna just have to watch the clip. But there's an old lady, probably 60s or 70s, who's right up front. And she looks
she's got her
like,
hands over her face, and she says, like,
she is in hysterics over this shit.
The command ship?
He destroyed the Codan Armada.
No, and here's the crazy thing, right? It's like, there's like old people freaking out.
No,
I'm sorry.
Starfighters, no plan. One ship, you, me, and that's it?
Exactly. Zero thinks you're still on Earth. Classic military strategy. Surprise attack.
It'll be a slaughter.
That's the spirit.
No, my slaughter. One ship against the whole Armada?
Yes, one gun star against the Armada. I've always wanted to fight a desperate battle against incredible odds.
You can't see his face.
Alex.
I was going to say, you can't see his face, but Alex is like, oh, dear Lord, I've just gotten to a giant gunship with a suicidal armadillo.
Yeah, that pretentious bastard pontificating is Grig.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just... I grabbed that clip because just to see if I can get his laugh.
Yeah, he didn't do the.
It probably has in the beginning.
Just
somewhere.
Type in Grig laughing. I bet if you type in Grig laughing, you'll find it. I bet you.
I'll just type in Grig.
Just really
Grig laughing.
He does it a lot. So I'm surprised it didn't happen
did
that soon.
A compilation.
Oh, God, there's a compilation
okay.
of it. Yes. Oh, God, prepare, ladies and gentlemen. Right, this is going to be awesome.
Prepare yourselves for the compilation.
Yeah. Then we should probably wrap this
Dan
up.
Dan O'Hurley, here it is.
Go. Star Navigator First Class Grig, at your service, sir.
Hi, I'm Alex Rogan.
That's the spirit. Oh, it is her maiden voyage. You did it!
See, the creepiest thing about it is it's like halfway between a laugh and a dry heave. So I can't tell if Dan O'Hurley's trying to get sick mid-shoot or if he's just laughing.
It's pretty much what I'd imagine the sound that like a 70-year-old man makes when he climaxes.
Okay, do me a favor. Help me back up on my walker.
Wait, you know what actually makes sense? He was about in his 70s when he did this role.
Well, that's far too old to be piloting a Gunstar.
When I say life alert, you say...
One last thing I wanted to mention. We're spooling through the credits at the end when we were watching this movie. And like we get through and like there's no one we know in this entire fucking... Right until like the second to last... credit of the entire film. Second to last credit in the entire film, right?
Of the cast, that is.
Of the cast, right? And it says, I'm not joking, Lewis's friend, played by Will Wheaton.
Now, and Lewis was Alex's younger brother.
Younger brother.
Who was awful.
Who was like a pervert, like a perverted teenager, but was only like 9 years old.
He's only like, yeah, he's like maybe 10,
probably
years
younger.
Old at most. That's at most. And he spends most of the movie like in
reading
his room,
Playboys
jacking
and
off
swearing.
To Playboy.
Yeah.
And saying diarrhea to people just making out.
Oh, yeah. Which is funny because he watches he's reading Playboys, but yet when Maggie and Alex are making out, he's like, diarrhea.
Kissing is gross, but he has like 10 Playboys.
Yeah, yeah,
kissing
I know.
Kissing is gross, but porn is okay.
Yeah, I know. Kissing is fine, but snatch is no. But anyway, so we see this, and the funniest that was probably the funniest bit of the evening was my immediate response was, Will Wheaton was in this movie? And then Jordan immediately response was, Lewis had friends? And then we all had a good laugh.
We all had a good laugh.
G.I. Joe, real American hero.
So that wraps it up for Beejin in the movies.
Yes,
so
hopefully come back next week. We'll have hopefully have seen Skyfall.
And hopefully I will be using that quote from, hey, he broke the record at MAGFest at everybody doing anything ever.
I think that's what we're going to do. We're just going to walk up to random people,
hey,
watch them play.
He's about to break the record.
Hey, this girl's going for the record.
I'm just to see if
people just start crowding around and freaking the fuck out.
Dude, I'm just playing Q-Bert.
Hey, everybody.
He's going for the Q-Bert record. He's making a scene.
Hey, everybody, he's about to break the record. This is a claw machine.
He's actually going to get something.
I would have liked to talk about Otis, but I think you should just go watch The Last Starfighter.
Otis is basically Black Obi-Wan.
We're done.
He's Black Obi-Wan.
All right, we're done here. But plugs.
Oh, right, but plugs.
God damn it. Really?
Stop, of course. As Sean already mentioned, castwagstudios.com is your source for podcasts, music, video. Shop through at Amazon, buy stuff, get us money, everyone wins, and we've got a blog. It's just a good place.
It's a good place to be.
It's a safe place.
You should also follow
You're all friends here.
As well as us, you should also follow our individual Twitters, which are...
Sean's individual Twitter is Sean L. Holmes.
That is correct, sir.
That's Colin. Colin's individual Twitter is Colin20-something, S-O-M-E-T-H-I-N. And Justin's is J-Eisen88.
Correct.
I'm sorry, at J-Eisen88.
And also, don't forget to check out our sister shows on castwavestudios.com, BGN Comic Shop, our video show, One Drunk Geek, and our new adopted pilot, Big Stuff.
Big Stuff.
Big Stuff.
Big Stuff.
S-C-H-T-U-F-F.
Oh, so it is officially Stuff.
It's officially Stuff.
Okay.
We got Big Stuff here at Castle Studios. Okay. So check that out, that pilot. It's awesome.
Also, MAGFest coming up January 3rd through January 6th at the Gaylord National Resort in National Harbor, Maryland. Brian's excited, as you can obviously hear.
Yes. Yeah.
We have got huge plans for this. I would say stay tuned to the Castwave Studios. Yeah, to the Castwave Studios. Stay tuned to the Castwave Studios YouTube channel because we're going to be putting up videos explaining what we're going to be doing. It's going to be phenomenal. I think that's going to wrap it up all for us here. So, Justin, take us home.
Well, until next time, I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
And I'm Sean Holmes.
And we are boldly going nowhere.
Outro.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.
You did it!